It's been a while, but we're back. I'm Rusty, joined by Sean. We're slinging quack. It's the end of the year, given the Oregon quarter system. Graduation was last week.
Another year has come and gone.
Yes. A whole flock of ducks has graduated, but a whole new flock is coming in. It's the circle of life.
It's the circle of life.
Yes.
Going around the O.
Yeah, I was actually at the social sciences graduation last week, and there were a lot of athletes in that group. I was there to see a friend, but there was like two basketball players, a lot of athletic department workers were in attendance. Dana Altman was there.
Good old Dana.
Along with Greg Pittens.
Good old Dana and Pittens holding it down.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, I was looking at all the photos of everyone I knew graduating, and that was 2 years ago now for me, and time's going by quicker and quicker.
Wait, what year did you graduate?
2013.
Wow, we were in the same graduation year.
Yep.
What was your major?
Journalism.
Okay, that's why. Okay, everything's coming together now.
It all makes sense.
All right, so where do we want to start recapping this last year of Duck sports?
Let's start from the fall and work our way through the calendar.
You don't want to go reverse chronological?
We'll keep it in order. Okay. Otherwise, my head might spontaneously combust.
All right. So let's start with the most important sport.
Football. Which we're 75 days away from, by the way.
Oh, it's 75
today? It's 75.
Okay. We're recording this on a Monday.
Yeah. Monday, June 22nd, wow. 75 days.
I remember putting up like a post that was like, we're 224 days away, and just like crying a little bit.
Yeah, we're into double digits now.
Oh, wow.
We've gone past triple digits. We're now down to double digits.
Is Phil Steele's book out?
Not that I've seen, but I haven't been keeping an eye out for it, so.
That's so crazy. Normally it's out by like April. Or like May at the latest.
Yeah. But Oregon football, it was so close again. And, you know, I was kind of, you know, this is the second time that I've kind of been in the midst of the national championship hoopla, whatever we want to call it. And, you know, I'm trying to compare the two seasons and the two games. You know, 2010, you had the almost perfect season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were the New England Patriots of college football that year. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if I look back on like which loss was tougher to swallow, it was the Ohio State one for me.
Because wasn't competitive. It was just like, wow, they are better.
It was just the sad realization that you're just getting your ass handed to you by the better team. And it's like, you know, the 2010 game with everything that went down, low scoring game, you know, the Jeff Mail 2-point conversion.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
I remember I was in a fraternity on campus at the time. We were having a giant ash. Before I saw the light, but having Kappa Sigma.
Okay, not terrible. So, if it was SAE,
yeah,
destroyer of Heismans.
Yeah, it was. So it was had a watch party at one of the guys' apartments, and there were probably 30 to 40 of us in a living room meant for about 10. So
perfect. Sounds about right. You
know, and I remember Jeff Mail scores that touchdown, and it's just like, the best way I could describe the celebration is like when you get a group of 25 guys on a baseball team and someone just hit a walk-off home run and you have that mobbing at home plate.
Yeah.
It was like that basically. And
just a mess of celebration.
Just a mess of celebration and emotions flowing. And then, of course, everything that transpired. And I'll never forget one of the guys next to me, you know, freshman, brand new to college, brand new to the fraternity life. And he just looks at me and he goes, And I'm saying this verbatim. He goes, "Bro, you trying to rage tonight?"
Say that again?
Like, he said, "Bro, you trying to rage tonight?"
The answer is yes.
It's like,
this guy's a freshman?
He was a freshman. He was ready to party.
Of course.
I was like, "No, I'm going to go cry myself to sleep, but you can go hang on a light pole. That's fine."
Oh, yeah. These are the guys who don't understand. Like, I'm not trying to be like one of those people that's like, "Oh, back in my day, Oregon sucked." But it's kind of like there's so many people today. Like, if you're 12 or younger, you live in a world where Washington has never beaten Oregon.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's like, it's gotta be amazing. And it's that type of like dominance, like almost from 2009 on.
Yeah.
We have been so spoiled.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it started to kind of pick up in like 2008, I feel like, was a pretty solid year. I mean, that was still when, like, I remember I went to the Holiday Bowl that year and we were all pretty stoked about that. And then Chip Kelly kind of just took it to the next level in 2009, and it's just been on cloud nine ever
since. Wait, you went to the Holiday Bowl against Oklahoma State?
I was there.
I was too. How have we never run across each other in real life?
It's amazing how these things happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's spoiled is the right word. It's like when we're looking back at, you know, what was it? Not this past season, but the season before, we went like 11-2 and won the Alamo Bowl, and the season was basically marked as a failure by that point. And it was just, you know, out of all the bowl games I've watched from the time I've been a Ducks fan, you know, I probably could barely tell you anything that happened in the Alamo Bowl. I really don't remember much of that game. And I just think it's just because I just didn't care. And that's kind of the level that Oregon football has gotten to, where, you know, if it's basically, you know, it's BCS or bust. I don't know. I guess now it's New Year's Six or bust. I don't know what the standard is anymore. It's a whole new confusing world.
Oh, yeah. It's playoffs or bust.
Yeah.
Or Rose Bowl. It's playoffs.
Playoffs or Rose Bowl or, you know, otherwise it's a failure. And this was just, you know, this was a magical season for football because Marcus Mariota obviously finally got the Heisman.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's again, so damn close. But watching that Ohio State game, that was just, you know, it was like you were watching a kind of a slow motion, just see it coming, and you wanted to deny the inevitable, but
oh yeah,
it was Oregon was basically playing catch up for almost the whole game, and Ohio State was just the better team that day. And, you know, hats off to them. But I was speaking of football and the way too early mock drafts for next year. I've been seeing, is it Joey Bosa? Is that how you pronounce it? The lineman from hell that almost killed Marcus. Bosa. I'm blanking on my pronunciations here. But he's projected to go number one overall to the Titans. I saw in one of the SB Nation mock drafts. And how awkward would that be?
I don't know. See, I have not even like had an image of. Actually, that's not true. I have an image of, like, Ezekiel Elliott, like, breaking a couple tackles and going outside and just being like, "All right, well, this is kind of how this game's going."
Yep.
And when Cardale Jones ran over Balducci.
Yeah.
That was the worst. That was bad. That was also the game where it's like, "All right, well, if Ohio State can do this with their third-string quarterback, then you know what? Maybe they are the national champions, and there's nothing we can do about it."
It's just inevitable.
Yeah. And,
you know, they took away us finally getting to play Alabama, but
dicks.
One day it'll happen.
Yeah. I think like the real big takeaway is that I think like the first time where Oregon got like a taste of being on the top of the national like realm is 2007.
Right.
It was Chip Kelly's first year. Dennis Dixon went from basket case to Heisman contender until his ACL pooped out. And that one, because that year was absolutely insane. That year was like, I think the number two team, including Oregon, lost for like 10 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I remember that year. That was before I saw the light and became a Ducks fan. That was the first year I'd moved. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and I had just moved there.
Uh-huh.
So my mom and I went to the Cal Tennessee game where DeSean Jackson went all PlayStation on him on that punt
return. Oh, right. I remember sitting in Tracktown and watching that happen.
Yeah. And so we were at that game, actually sitting in the Tennessee section. And, you know, after that game, we actually went out and bought Cal season tickets for that year. And I remember, I'll never forget this. I took a girl I was dating at the time to the Cal Oregon State game, the one where they all they needed to do was win and they'd be number one.
Oh yeah,
and just fell apart at the end.
I remember that because what was the guy's name? Nate. What was their quarterback's name? Nate Longshore.
That's it.
And he instead of spiking the ball and getting their kicking unit on.
Yeah.
On third down, like there was chaos, and the field goal team tried to run on, and they didn't get the kickoff.
Yeah, I remember watching that from the stands, just hopeless, you know, and just seeing it all like all go wrong. Yeah, it was 31-28 was the final score, and oh man. So, long story short, game ends, heartbreak ensues. And the girl I'm with, we're walking home, and she goes, I don't get you tonight. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, well, sometimes tonight you were happy and jumping up and down cheering. Sometimes you were sad. Now you're just quiet. I don't like it. I was like,
welcome to college football.
I was like, you just described college football in a nutshell. Needless to say, the relationship didn't last much longer.
Yeah, did you just cut the cable then? Just like, all right, you know what?
It went on for a little bit longer, but I think that was the moment that just doomed it all. Uh-huh. Kevin Riley was the quarterback that game.
Oh, because he had taken over for Nate Longshore.
He was in Nate Longshore, whose ankle was... I'm getting this from Wikipedia, so you know it's true.
Yeah. Wikipedia is actually a solid source, because they do a lot of peer review on there. People hate on it, but it's actually really solid.
Injured during the final minutes of the game against Oregon. And so Kevin Riley was informed that he would start the game 10 minutes before the start of the game.
Oh, well, that's pretty positive.
All right. So, but yeah, that was 2007 in a nutshell. It was just, you don't want to be near the top. It was just a cursed spot.
Yep. And that was the year Cameron Colvin fumbled through the end zone.
Yep.
Yeah, but the big difference between 2007 and this last year was that this year it really felt like Oregon belonged at the top.
Exactly.
2007 was like, oh, this is one of those years. We're going to catch a break.
Yeah.
And then two or 3 years ago when Alabama just rolled over Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And that was the other year where it was like, this is go time. Like, that, this is our time to just kind of slide into this national championship, like slide into the DMs. And, like, end up getting Notre Dame, because we would have shredded Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Just like in 2007, we would have shredded Ohio State.
Exactly.
Who was not playing in 2007 years. They were still playing, like, 1986.
Now, are you one to believe that like a national title win is a win no matter what, or do you want that signature win over like Ohio State or Alabama?
Oh, I don't care.
We'll take anyone.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't care. Think Alabama cares about like who they beat in their 12 national titles? No.
No, you get the shiny trophy at the end.
Just got to get one, and you're fine. See, like, take a... Let's think about this real quick. I'll pull up an example. All right. Alabama won the 1992 Division I football game, or football national championship. I think I slaughtered that name enough. Who did they beat?
Is this a trivia question?
Yes.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Exactly.
I'm going to Wikipedia here.
Oh, well, I can tell you the answer now. See, the point is that you don't know.
Yeah.
No one remembers, like, in a given year.
Well, that's very true. I see what you're doing here.
Yeah. And the answer is Miami, who's number one. But that doesn't matter, you know? It doesn't matter who they beat.
Even though they were the number one team, you're still just going to remember that as a national championship team. You're not going to remember who it was.
Exactly.
I like it.
Yeah. Like, I don't think anyone's kind of like... Like, when Florida beat Ohio State, people were just like, oh, yeah, Florida won that national title game. And there's like, oh, yeah, that was the year the SEC, like, took over. But, like, 20 years, they're going to be like, yeah, that's when Florida just wrecked and the SEC took over. They're not going to be like... Oh, that's when they just trounced Ohio State.
Yeah.
With Troy Smith as quarterback. So, remember that year they won it? We are so off topic. Remember that year?
Sling and quack in a nutshell.
Because, yeah, seriously. That was the year that Michigan and Ohio State were 1-2 most of the season.
Oh, I remember
and
that.
And Michigan lost to Ohio State in the Big House. And it was Ohio State won 42-39.
Yeah.
Because Troy Smith, like, scrambled for a long time, hit Ted Ginn in the, like, the near right corner of the end zone to go up. And for a while, they were like, who do we vote? We should give them a rematch. Like, they're the clear number one of two teams.
Yeah.
And then Florida ended up sliding in to the DMs and, just blown away. Just made them look terrible.
Yeah.
And then, here's another great question. Who did Florida beat the next year for the national championship?
Oh, what year is this? Is this 2007?
I think it's 2008.
Didn't they beat Notre Dame?
No.
Who was it?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, that's right.
I correct myself. It was 2009 that they did that.
2009.
In 2008, LSU beat Ohio State 38-24. And that year, Tim Tebow won the Heisman. The next year, because then they played Michigan in the Citrus Bowl, Michigan in Lloyd Carr's last game actually beat Florida after teams thought they would get shredded.
Oh, yeah.
And... the next year, Sam Bradford won the Heisman, and it was another matchup where two Heisman winners faced off against each other. So, all right, cool.
But I would say, with football, what's your memory of the year from football?
Oh wow. I think it would be the memory of the year. There's a couple. I was originally going to say the first half of the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah.
Where Arizona didn't cross the 50.
That was magical.
Like, that was the time where I was like, wow, this defense is legit. They were averaging, Arizona was averaging like minus 0.6 yards a carry at one point.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
And because like, people are always like, oh, Oregon gives up so many yards and so many points. It's like, well, yeah, they're playing 8 more possessions on defense than anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, they have to play so many games. But, like, if you look at, like, yards per play or points per possession, they're, like, one of the best in the country.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was, it was just like, oh, wow, this is like an Alabama-type performance on defense. But I think the memory that I will always have of this season is Jameis Winston fumbling the ball backwards and Tony Washington picking it up and running it back. I was at that game, and that's the point. Like, that was their 4th turnover in a row, and so they had 3 others before that. There was a fumble, there was 2 fumbles, and, like, another interception. And then it was the Jameis Winston fumble.
Yeah.
And at that point, everybody on our section, like, it wasn't even cheering, we were just laughing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Were you there?
I was there. I was up at the, another place we've been.
Yeah.
Same spot.
What are we doing?
I was up in the, so you know the Florida State end zone?
Yes.
Basically, like, top corner of their end zone on the side of, like, the press box.
Okay, so we were opposite.
Literally last row in the stadium.
Okay.
Yeah.
When Tony Washington picked the ball up, he was running towards my section.
Yeah, so you were, like, more towards, like, where all the, like, the quote-unquote official Oregon section was.
Yeah. And that was the play where it's just like, oh, my God, this is hilarious.
Yeah. And, yeah, I'd easily say Rose Bowl is the memory of the year for a few reasons. One of them just being the simplicity of, after being at, I was lucky enough where that's the 3rd Rose Bowl I've been to in person. Mm-hmm. I've been to all the modern recent ones we've been to in this decade.
Mm-hmm.
And both against Ohio State and Wisconsin, we were just grossly outnumbered by the opposing fans.
Oh yeah, Wisconsin.
Which was bad. Sad because they had to travel such a further distance than we did. And so I was just so worried. I was like, oh my God. Like,
well, I would pay to get out of Wisconsin too.
You know, it's it's a vacation for them.
Yeah.
We're going to see the sunshine. And I was like, you know, I know it's a long way from the travel, but my God, there's going to be Florida State fans everywhere. And I might get arrested by the end of the night. I don't know, you know? Uh-huh. And the fact that just none of them even showed up was magical to begin with. It was essentially a home game.
Yeah. And people, because
I had, leading in the weeks leading up to the game, I would listen to, like, a YouTube clip of their war chant to try and, like, numb the sound and just be used to it, because I was like if this game goes south, that, like, that is just gonna haunt my dreams for eternity.
Yeah.
But,
well, that song only played for 2 quarters.
The fact that none of them showed up, and, you know, it was competitive at first, and then we just stepped on the throttle and just stepped on their throats. And then just that, like, that moment of realization. And I think it was the Winston fumble when it finally, like, fully hit me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, we're going to the national championship game. Like, I've never been. I was happier that night than at the end of the 2012 Rose Bowl, and I didn't know if I would ever, like, experience that level of joy again.
It's like your first hit of heroin. Oh, man.
So that was, yeah, Rose Bowl, memory of the year, football. And so that was great.
That was just, I think, as a fan, that might have meant more to us than I mean, it might have meant as much to us as it meant to the football players.
Exactly.
Because we had to put up with FSU Twitter for a month.
Oh, I didn't think I was going to make it out of December alive.
I remember just listening to this and, like, do these guys actually believe these things they're saying?
Yeah.
And, I mean, amongst the communities, there is some snobbery going on. that we won't dive into the details on.
But. Yeah, all I'm gonna say is I'm glad I was not managing editor yet for that little stint, because I would have just turned a blind eye to all of it and not worried about it, and I'm sure just all hell would have broken loose.
Yeah, man, but it was so funny, like, because all year they were such a paper tiger. And it was just like scratching out a win against Louisville, like looking terrible for 50 minutes and then playing well for 10 minutes and somehow getting a win. And having to deal with the narrative of like, oh, they just win. They just keep winning. Always find a way to win. It's like, oh my God, please. You're playing Louisville.
Yeah. Scraping out wins every single week against like,
nobody's
against games that should be cakewalks, you know.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, any given Saturday anyone can beat anyone. Well, it's like, well, if you're the number one team in the country, you should be able to cruise through these games.
Yeah, and I get it too, that like when you're at the top, you're gonna get every team's best shot, and so every team is gonna play their best game of the year against you,
right?
But even then, like, every game just being ugly as hell.
Yeah, that's, you should have terrible. A few close games in there, but like, it was consistently every single game.
Yeah, and just hearing their players too, I think that's what like really agitated me most, is they were like, yeah, Marcus Mariota is like we got a lot of guys who are faster than Marcus Mariota. He's not that scary. Cut to Marcus Mariota just crushing them with his legs. Like, making them look... I specifically remember there was a time on a zone read where he pulled it and split two Florida State defenders who almost ran into each other and scoring a touchdown to, like, ice it. And then Thomas Tyner, like, running over people. How about Thomas Tyner? Most improved.
Absolutely.
He came in as the track star. He shredded the high school I went to when he was at Aloha. He ran for like 700 yards and like 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
In a close game.
I remember all the hype surrounding him, and just you'd see his stat lines week after week, and you'd be like, this is not a human being.
Right. There's
no way a kid should be able to do this. And... yeah, he came up clutch in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and it was really when he got pushed by Royce Freeman, and Royce Freeman started taking, he became the starter.
Yeah.
And because he was just making the one cut and go and just like making the most of it, and Thomas Tyner was very content to like kind of bounce around and always hit the home run.
Yeah.
And once Tyner came back from his injury, he was injured for a while, he ran with like the same attitude Royce did, but using his own style. And that's when it was like, oh wow, both of these guys are just killing it now.
Yeah.
Like, now it's almost like if you take Tyner at his best and Royce at his best, I don't even know how the coaches pick between them.
You gotta let them do their thing and let them run wild. And
yeah.
I think that's going to be, you know, looking quickly to 2015, I think that's really going to be the strength of the team next year.
Oh, it's got to be.
It's going to take, let's just say, sorry, Jeff Locke, love you, dude, but let's just say Vernon Adams does what he needs to do, adjusts, and is the starter the whole year consistently.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, there's always going to be some pressure on him because he's the first guy after Marcus Mariota.
Uh-huh.
And that's just a tough role for anyone. And having that backfield that he's going to have is going to take so much pressure off of his shoulders. And, you know, people are saying that this year's receiving core is possibly the best that Oregon has ever seen in their history.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And... you know, it's like, okay, so if best case scenario, you know, Adams adjusts perfectly, he knows how to utilize all his weapons, you know, Tyner and Freeman do their thing in the backfield, and just if everything clicks like it it should on paper, it's going to be a scary team next year.
Yeah, I mean, that all comes down, I think the biggest determinant is going to be the offensive line. So yeah. Thank God we got that Notre Dame center, because I was not stoked about the after the spring game. I would rather have him than Everett Golson.
Yeah.
Zero questions asked. And, like, that's going to, especially, like, what we learned in the national championship game, like, what separates from the national title runner-ups from the champions are the lines. Like, the lines are so important. Like, yeah. Ohio State's offensive line was unbelievable.
I'm feeling much better about the O-line now than I did, you know, before the transfers, and so things are looking up.
Okay.
But let's move on to basketball.
Are we not going to do cross country?
I love cross country. I'm a runner. I'll, you know, give a shout out here to Edward Cheserek. Call him King Cheserek for a reason. I was looking at, I think they got both the men and women took sixth overall at nationals.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Cheserek took the individual title. That kid's special. We'll talk more about him when we get to track, because I do want to talk about track towards
the end. Yeah, I mean, cross country and track kind of fall under the same umbrella.
Yeah. But basketball here, surprisingly yeah. successful season.
I think surprisingly successful is the understatement of the year. I was expecting, I kid you not, when Dave and I were talking about this before the season started, I think I was expecting, like, I thought if we hit double-digit wins, I would be excited.
Yeah, I was
that's where we were like, we have zero. Yeah, we have zero expectations of how the season is going to go. Like, we can chalk this one up as a nothing, because we have, like, this cupboard is bare. We got, like, a couple, like, utility guys, and that is it.
Yeah, I was talking to my buddy before the year, and I was saying I will not be surprised if this team loses 20 or more games this year. And they made it work.
It's unbelievable. And, it's unbelievable.
Know, they played, beat Oklahoma State again in the tournament, played Wisconsin fairly close for a while.
Yeah, they were tied late. They made it to the championship game of the Pac-12 tournament.
Thanks to... I remember watching the Oregon-Utah game when Joe Young sinked the game-winning three.
Uh-huh.
And it was the most bizarre moment because... And I think I might have... I've told this story somewhere, either on here or... I think it was on here on an earlier episode.
Uh-huh.
But watching the game at my house by myself, and... I'm a very, like, quiet sports fan when I watch on TV.
Oh, yeah. You know? I hate watching with other people.
I don't get very... I might clap a little bit. I might, you know, give a little fist bump. But I'm not a very vocal sports fan on, you know, when I'm not at the game.
Uh-huh.
And I just had this most bizarre reaction where I was, you know, standing up, pacing back and forth, dribbles up, nails it. And I just start, like, I start jumping around up and down like I would as if I was at the game.
Yeah.
But there not a sound came out of my mouth. And it was just purely jumping. And, like, thank God I live in a house and not, like, an apartment with people below me, because they probably would have thought it was the apocalypse or something. But big day on Tuesday with Murray and the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, according to Elgin Cook, it's already locked up.
Yeah, I remember I got a screenshot from someone, and I was like, who's that? He's like, oh, it's like us in Kentucky that are competing for him.
Is Elgin Cook a trusted source?
Well, we're going to find out tomorrow.
I guess we'll find out. If it's true, I'm going to Elgin Cook for all my Oregon basketball news from now on. Yeah,
seriously. That'd be crazy.
But this could really be a, you know, with Dylan Ennis transferring in, and Murray possibly committing, cross your fingers, say your prayers to the recruiting gods tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, you know, if all of that comes together, I actually do have expectations for next year, which is kind of refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
I expect them to be a very solid team. I expect them to be a tournament team. Maybe Sweet 16 at best would be nice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just going to be a complete turnaround from this past year when there was just zero expectations.
Which would be weird to have. Like, expectations. I don't remember the last year I went into a season and was like, oh, yeah, we're going to be good.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember you made a point on the last podcast that we did, going over recruiting and everything. You know what? I still have the file. I just can't figure out how to get it. It's, like, not converting or something, right?
It's in the abyss of the internet.
Yeah, it's on my computer. Like, I can listen back to it. Not that I will, because I hate hearing my own voice back to me. Like, I'm sorry for anyone I've ever talked to. And you had a great point that was, we were doing, like, true or false questions. And you said, like, true or false, every Oregon team underperformed under Ernie Kent. And we were kind of, and so Dave and I were, and we all kind of went as a group over the, like, Ernie Kent teams, and we're like, yeah, they kind of underperformed every year.
Mm-hmm.
Except for 2007.
Right.
When they had Aaron Brooks and Tuan Porter. And you were saying, and the next one was true or false, Dana Altman has exceeded expectations every year. And that was, like, the easiest true ever. It's really as, like, he is kind of boring. The team is, I don't know, like, because ticket sales are very poor.
Ticket sales are an embarrassment.
It's not good.
That's the only way to put it.
They're incredibly overpriced.
Yeah. I think I wrote a piece earlier at some point, probably, I think it was late in the basketball season. It was basically diving into the whole ticket issue of.
Oh, yeah. You solved the ticket issue.
The team is basically exceeding expectations and playing incredible, but just nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And I broke down the prices, and I think I said for you, just your average night for a family of four, a Ducks game, it'll cost you a couple $100 to go to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And because you would look at ticket prices, and I think like the average ticket price was like $40 or $45 a ticket or something. And that's just disgusting. Like, you can't expect to gather, like, unless you're an elite program, you can't justify charging that amount of money. And they finally got it one day where they did, like, that insane promotion for, like, what was it, like, $12 tickets in the whole arena for the Utah game or something?
Yeah, it was far discounted. So I don't think you could, I don't think it was, like, even at the lower bowl it was 12. It was, like, 25 or something.
Yeah.
And it sold out.
Yeah, and they packed the place. And it's like, look at what you guys can do when you actually make ticket prices reasonable. And you can pack that venue. Because I've been in Matthew Knight Arena when it's packed with 12,000 people. And it gets deafening in there when they pack the house.
Because that's what it was designed to do.
But when you're consistently filling, like, when you're consistently pulling just games where it's, you know, it's half empty, it's just not an intimidating venue whatsoever. And that's just part of...
No, it's a nice place to play.
Yeah, it's a nice arena, and that's all it is. But that's not what you want, intimidation in college basketball. And, you know, so... I don't think we'll ever, you know, we're not going to see, oh, we're just going to slash the ticket prices in half for the whole season out of the blue. But, you know, they got to do something to fix that.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this before on the podcast. I mean, we've had this discussion in detail. But, like, just from a marketing standpoint, I think they do a terrible job of, like, explaining what there is to be excited about. Because winning does not necessarily sell tickets. And if you're using winning to sell tickets, that puts you in a terrible spot, like, over the long term.
Yeah, I've talked to some marketing people, and they've said that what you have to do in sports when you're marketing things is you need to sell things that you can control. And for more or less, like, wins and losses, you can't, from a marketing side of things, you can't control that.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's all on the players and the coaches and all that. And so you need to find a way. And I think it's tough. It's maybe tougher in college sports, because then you've got, it's like, okay, how do you, you know, where are we marketing amateur athletes and that whole line? And maybe it's just a tougher, you know, maybe the college world is just a tougher place to market because they're just kids. But, you know, I'd like to believe that the people of Oregon marketing have got to be able to come up with something to get people excited about games. I don't know, give away another Phil Knight bobblehead or something.
Yeah.
That packed the house.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you look at, like, the football team, it's got, like, a very specific brand, right? Like, it's progressive and fast, and it's like,
they know exactly what their identity is. And I think the problem with Oregon basketball is that because Dana Altman kind of has, his style is kind of building, he kind of builds his teams around transfers.
Yeah.
You don't build a relationship with the player. Like, there's no connection
between. Yeah, that's tough.
The players, you know, it's like, you know, who really, like, who had a bigger kind of impact? Like, I'm thinking, you know, let's compare, like, EJ Singler versus Joseph Young. You know, EJ Singler is an Oregon kid, all 4 years at Oregon, you know, and that was kind of like, you have that close relation, like,
yeah,
you have that close connection. Joe Young is an incredibly talented player, probably one of the best scorers in Oregon history, but he was only here for a couple of years and he's gone, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, I've seen Dana kind of, he's done a better job at kind of recruiting guys straight out of high school and not necessarily building the teams around transfers as much. And I think if you can get a solid group of guys who are together for 4 years, I think by that third, fourth year, you've got the fans who have, like, come to love, like, grown to love these players and have watched them for 4 years. And,
yeah,
you know, so that's kind of, I think that's the problem with Oregon basketball, is just that when you have a team built around transfers, there's just no connection. It's just, okay, we're getting a new team every couple of years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited for this upcoming year. I think it should be a good one. But if there's one thing I've learned in sports, specifically being a Mariners fan, is that hope and expectations are a dangerous thing.
Oh, yeah. It's I mean, that was the whole story of Dark Knight Rises. That was the whole part of, like, the prison that he was in.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, man, this basketball team. So impressive.
Who's up next?
Women's basketball.
Women's basketball. Kelly Graves. I didn't get to watch much of them this year, but from what I did see, it seems like things are taking a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes back to, I was chatting with some of the people that I worked with the Seattle Storm, and people who have been around women's basketball for a long time and really know the sport well.
Uh-huh.
And know the people involved. And one person specific I was talking to, she said that, you know, Paul Westhead was just never a good, it was, the team was never going to win under Paul Westhead, because it's just his style with the run and get, you know, the system and the run and gun offense and sprint down the court and huck up a three. It just was never going to work with Oregon. You needed a very specific group of players to be able to pull that off, and he just didn't have it, and he stuck by his system, and it crashed and burned and eventually cost him a job.
Yeah, I don't think he's too bummed about it, though. I mean, you don't get into women's basketball for the paycheck.
Yeah, he's got his NBA championships, and but I, you know, I think that it's a little bit better of a fit with Kelly Graves, kind of more of your, you know, not so crazy fast up tempo, and it, you know, it's that's the way I can summarize it. Step in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I was like very excited about Paul Westhead coming, because I was like, oh, he has like a very exciting brand. Like, this is exciting. And he had like the 30 for 30 after him and everything. And I remember, especially when that 30 for 30 was coming out, I was listening to interviews of him, and I was like, yeah, this guy is like the women's basketball coach. But the wins just did not come up. And I mean, I don't know if I want this to come off wrong, but I mean, there are physical differences between men and women. And I don't know, like, because all of the guys that were, like, on his team were, like, it was freakishly in shape.
Right.
Like, they spent, like, whole practices just running. And I don't know necessarily if that will have the same results on women. Although I do think that women play, like, a much better form of team basketball than guys do.
Oh, absolutely. They actually play defense and
use teamwork, you know, on offense.
And that when I was having the discussion about the system and how it just didn't work, part of it was simply, and it's not, you know, it's not a sexist statement at all. It's just, it works better when you have a men's team, because it's just the, you know, it's not saying someone's better than the other. It's just someone's more physically, you know, men are just more physically in shape for that kind of run and gun system. And that's not, you know, it's not saying that women aren't in shape, because I'm sure if we tried to go play a pickup game with the women's basketball team, they'd mop the floor with us.
And, oh yeah. I'd be,
you know,
yeah,
probably half of us would literally have our ankles broken by the end.
Yeah. But it would be like those old Kobe commercials where they, like, Kobe does a crossover on one of the crash dummies and his ankles literally blow up.
Yeah. Someone's ankle would literally blow up on the court, and it would just be a mess.
Like, I'd have State Farm. I would just have my State Farm guy on hold in the arena.
Oh, man. So.
Yeah, but so, like, last year they went 500. This year was 13-17. I mean, that's a big improvement from Paul's last year, which was like 4 wins.
I covered that team that won like 4. Let's see what it was here.
I am so sorry.
4-27.
I am so sorry you had to do that.
And that was actually when I had landed that job with the Storm. I think part of the reason I landed that job is because it was a very similar situation where, you know, the Storm were publicly going about entering a rebuilding mode. And I have never been around a franchise or anything. And this is really, this is not trying to rip on the team at all. It's just, it was such a shock to me that I asked him about the season and the expectations, and they were content with losing, is essentially how it came across. They knew that, you know, it's like, I feel like you talk to any sports GM or coach or anything, and they'll tell you, well, you know, winning the championship should be the only goal every year. And they were just, you know, they were basically saying, they weren't publicly admitting to to doing a tank job this year for the number one pick again, but it was pretty close.
Oh, for the Seattle Storm?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think part of covering that women's team, the 2012-2013 team that went 4-27 and 2-16 in the conference, 1-10 on the road, 3-13 at home. You know, it's that was such a tough team to cover because you got to, so let's, I'm counting one of their losing streaks here. 14 out of 15 games they lost between December 21st and February 15th.
Man.
And then 15, 16, 17. They lost 18 out of their last 19, 18 out of the last 20.
Man, that is soul crushing.
And you just get by the end of the year and you could just see Westhead was just beat from it. And it was basically, he was just shrugging his shoulders by the end of the year. And, you know, it's just like, you don't know what to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole team is defeated. I'm sure the coaching staff is defeated. And that was just, that was the lowest of lows. And so, you know, you look at even that, you know, the next year, the jump going from 4-27 to 16-16, that's huge.
Oh, it's monstrous.
They were still awful on the road, 2-9, but they went 14-6 at home. And, you know, last year they were 10-7 at home. 3-7 on the road last. They just need, they need to figure out how to win on the road, and they might be okay. I'm, you know, I'm sure that's easier said than done, but
yeah, I mean, man, those, that 4-26 year, 4-27 year,
brutal.
Glad that got turned around, because I had some friends who had friends on the basketball team, and even they were like, "Yeah, it's rough." So, man, that's terrible. That reminds me of, like, I forget what where I heard this exactly, whether it was through another football guy I knew in the NFL or if it was, like, just a story I read somewhere. But they were saying how, how coaching matters so much in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And after being on, like, a couple really good teams, this guy was on, like, a bad team. Like, I think it was, who was it? I think it was with the Titans a few years ago. And he said, like, they would go into meetings and do, like, their prep for the game. No, it was with the Browns.
Oh.
Yeah. Everything came into focus. And he would say how they would go into meetings, like, on Monday to go over how to, like, what the game plan was, and guys would just hang their heads knowing that they weren't going to win.
That's unfortunate.
Like, they go in, and it's like, because they call all the shots, right? They're the coach, especially in football. Like, you just do whatever the coach says because he's the one getting everybody else to do it. And so they would hear the game plan, and they'd just be like, oh, man, it's not happening this week. Terrible feeling, because I mean, that's when one of the smartest things, what's that one guy's name, he played for the DB for the Jets, who's on, like, NFL Live, super loud, and that doesn't narrow it down at all on NFL Live.
Is it Keyshawn Johnson, receiver?
No, it was the guy, I remember him because he was the DB who recovered a fumble against the Giants in, like, the 70s. Herm Edwards.
Oh, Herm Edwards.
And he's the reason that the victory formation is around now, because he picked up the fumble and ran it in for a touchdown to win the game.
Yeah.
And he was saying how you don't get paid to play football in the NFL. You get paid to practice.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that, just hearing that and thinking about it that way, was just makes you totally revisit everything.
And I've heard variations of that, because I've heard from players that, you know, when you go into a game, you know, it's all based, you win the game, you win or lose the game in practice that week.
Mm-hmm.
And all the game is just simply executing what you did in practice. And if you don't practice well, you're just not going to win the game. And I've heard that. I think Tom Brady before the Super Bowl was saying that, you know, you win or lose these games in practice the week before leading up. And, you know, it makes sense to a certain extent.
Yeah. And I think that's something that was really true of when Chip Kelly came to Oregon, is the emphasis they put on practice. Apparently Bilotti wasn't too big on it every day. Like, they had 3 days a week where they really got after it.
Yeah.
But Chip Kelly just brought it up. And then even Mark Helfrich has continued it. And apparently turned it up another notch. How that's possible, I don't know, given Chip Kelly's demeanor. But it's like, one of the things too, like, I'm a big boxing fan. And one of the things, whatever you think about Floyd Mayweather, fine, whatever. He's not a likable guy. But one of the things he always gets a lot of credit for, because he'll have, like, celebrities come in his room and everything before he goes and fights.
Right.
And apparently he's just, like, calm as a Hindu cow, just, like, watching TV on the couch. And, like, people go into, like, every other room, like, no, don't talk to him or whatever. Like, he's like, he's getting ready. Or, like, go into people's dressing rooms and they're, like, very nervous or, like, anxious. And he's just kicking it.
Yeah.
And I think it was somebody, some super, I can't remember. It was some super famous athlete was in. He was like, you're not nervous right now? And he's like, nope. And the guy goes, why not? And he goes, I've been busting my ass for like 3 months to get ready. There's nothing that's going to happen between now and the fight that's going to get me any better for it.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I mean, I'll tell a quick story here. When I ran the Chicago Marathon in October, and I went into that race, and especially with the marathon, it's like, if you don't prepare for that, you're screwed.
Oh, you cannot cover that up.
You're a dead man walking. And I went into that race. I trained my ass off for 6 months, all through the spring and summer. And that was my ninth marathon I'd run, and I was never more confident going into a race than that one. And there's just a certain calmness about going into something that you've prepared for so well. And you know that, like, that morning, there's like nothing I do this morning is gonna before this race, before this fight, for whatever it is, nothing I do today leading up to it is gonna make a difference. So it's just this like serene moment of calmness. And yeah, it's all about the preparation. On a quick, while we're still quickly here on the topic of women's basketball, from the Facebook page of Oregon Women's Basketball 4 hours ago, Liz Brenner has accepted a scholarship offer from Kelly Graves for the 2015-16 season and will be back at UO for a fifth year.
Wait, where did she go?
I mean, she said she'll be back for a fifth year. I'm assuming she graduated. So she probably still has some eligibility lying around.
Did she go play professional volleyball or something?
That's pretty much what they all do. They go play overseas somewhere.
Okay.
But I just stumbled across this.
It had to be volleyball then.
Yeah.
So, all right. Whew, I gotta sneeze. Let's stick with women for right now.
All right.
Acrobatics and tumbling.
Acrobatics and tumbling.
Yeah. Because I David Piper and I had jokingly been talked about acrobatics and tumbling during like football and basketball season. Like, all right, big story. Acrobatics and tumbling win. So acrobatics and tumbling made it to the finals of a sport they basically made up, which is fine.
It's cool. However you got
Nobody it. Cares as long as you win the national championship, as we've already discussed.
Yes.
Lost in the finals to Baylor, I believe.
Baylor, correct.
Lost to Baylor, beat Hawaii Pacific. If anybody's a powerhouse, it's Hawaii Pacific.
Oh, yeah.
Just based off recruiting, I feel like that would just be a powerhouse to get.
The one thing I've learned about that sport this year is wherever Felicia Mulkey goes is the team that will win the national championship that year. First year at Baylor, she just takes Oregon and just beats them both times. They lost to Baylor in March in Eugene, and then
lost in April.
Lost in Waco. April. And they lost to Hawaii Pacific.
Man, maybe Honolulu, Hawaii.
Maybe shouldn't have spent so much time on the beach on paddle boards and more time preparing, as we've discussed.
Oh, did that happen? Do you know if that happened?
Oh, spring break photos everywhere on Facebook. They were like going to, I mean, I'd go to the beach too if I was in Hawaii. But yeah, they were something.
Not a great look.
They were all out in like a group team building exercise or something, going on paddle boards and hiking up mountains and all that fun stuff, and then lost to Hawaii Pacific.
Guess it wasn't a business trip.
Nah.
But a learning experience, because they beat Hawaii Pacific by like 2 points in the semis.
Ooh, squeak by there.
Yeah. I say it as if I know what I'm talking about.
Experts on the sport.
Yeah. I just see close scores. I'm like, ooh, that was close.
Yeah. Well, as I've discussed on Sling and Quack before, I once dated a girl for 6 months who was a member of the acrobatics and tumbling team. So I temporarily knew more about that sport than I ever imagined I would.
I remember discussing that.
But moving on. Yeah, it's these high scoring events. I will not pretend like I understand how the scoring works, but tough loss.
Yeah.
Moving on.
All right. So, do you want to hear another story? Or I guess another crazy sport? Sand volleyball.
Sand volleyball.
Title IX for the win.
Let me pull up.
So they lost to Washington to open the season in April.
They can't beat us in football, but they can beat us in sand volleyball.
Lost to Stanford, St. Mary's, and California. And then beat Cal Poly. You know, meanwhile, those four games were in 2 days.
Yeah, they...
That's crazy.
So here's the thing about... I'm looking over the... So let's see, April 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 matches, and their season lasts 20 days.
Title IX for the win. And I would also like to point out that they have, like, sport uniforms. It's not like what you would think, where it's highly sexualized and stuff. So, which is a plus. I mean, they play in Boise, so...
That's just unfortunate. I don't wish that upon my worst enemy.
Right. But, I mean, on the one hand, very nice that it's not that they're actually wearing, like, functional clothing.
Exactly.
I mean, let's be real here. It's finally nice that that's happening for, like, a women's sport.
We're progressing, finally.
Yeah. It's not like it's 2015 or anything. Do you want to... talk about golf, because we're going to finish with track and field.
We'll finish with track and field. I know nothing about golf.
Fantastic. But we also have baseball to talk about.
We do. Let me take a quick gander over golf here. They went to the NCAA championships. Kudos. Kudos there.
Yes.
Fifth and sixth at NCAA regionals.
Yeah.
Any year you go to the NCAA championships in anything, success in my book. Well done, golf.
Yeah. 18th, 14th, and 23rd in the NCAA championships.
I'll just say that golf is one of those things where I really wish I was good at it. In part because I wish I could justify like going out and doing something and wearing the... Golfers are the best dressed people in all of sports.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt. And
oh, for sure.
I wish I was good at the sport just so I could justify dressing like that. But I'm not, so I stay away from the golf course, mostly out of respect for other people.
Mostly out of respect for other people. Also of note, the women's team finished second in the Pac-12 after it looks like leading for the first 2 days at the Boulder Country Club. Finished eighth at the NCAA Regionals at San Antonio, Texas. Did not press on. But, oh, funny story I heard about golf. I remember I was, like, looking into, I was reading, like, some recruiting stuff. And I don't know if this is accurate anymore. This is, like, 2009. There were more scholarships available for women's golf than qualified players.
Wow.
Apparently, I really hope I'm right about this, so I don't sound like an idiot. Apparently, you have to have, like, a minimum, like, level of ability or skill based on your score to get a scholarship and play in college.
Like, you have to qualify for a scholarship?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like how you have to qualify for the Olympics, like, if you're swimming, yeah. And, like, just because your country has X many spots doesn't mean they can just fill them.
Yeah.
Unless in certain cases, like you're a Middle Eastern country and haven't had a woman compete in the Olympics ever, then they make like some exemptions and stuff. But I remember reading that there are more scholarships available than qualified women.
Wow. Gotta find some more golfers out there.
Yeah. So if you're hoping that your daughter makes it big in sports, just give her golf clubs.
Hit the links.
Yeah.
Get those tee times booked.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. You might end up spending 4 years of college education to do it, but...
It'll all be worth it. Yeah.
It'll all be worth it to break even and have a daughter who plays way better golf than you do. All right. Baseball.
Baseball.
George Horton. How many years in are we from... the baseball inception?
2000.
So it's been 6 years now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
6.
Yeah, it's been. This year was. I'm not mad at you, Oregon. I'm just disappointed. That's the summary.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird year. They lost to Iowa in the regionals.
They started off hot.
Had a few tough stretches, though. Like in March, they had a bad week. At the mid-March and the end of March, they had a bad couple bad weeks.
It was mid-March here. It started with San Francisco. They got swept by the Dons in Eugene. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Lost stretch from 6 out of 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, yeah, baseball?
Lost 6 out of 7. They finally picked it up at the end of the year and swept into the tournament.
Yeah, because there was a time when they were in danger of not making it.
Yeah. Big run, won 9 of their last 10 games to get in. And I've always said it's not about how you start, it's just getting hot at the right time.
Uh-huh.
And they did that. Unfortunately, they just ran out of gas in the tournament. But maybe they were just so gassed from going on that run just to get there that's they spent everything they had. But
yeah, I mean, unlike the basketball problem where people are like, I don't want to go to a basketball game. People love going to baseball games.
Going to baseball games, it's just fun. You know, weather is usually good.
Mm-hmm.
And PK Park, you know, nice venue. It's small like any other college baseball stadium, but its seats are not a bad seat in the house. You can get your $4 hot dogs that probably cost 50 cents to make.
And $2 to market.
That was what I missed most about covering baseball games is eating those hot dogs for free, knowing that you didn't have to pay $4 for one.
Yeah, but that's the best part.
Yeah, it just good. Looking back on my time as a student, always good, solid memories at PK Park.
Mm-hmm.
And was it one of the years we were playing? I think it was the Super Regionals when we played Kent State. And I think their like nickname is like the Golden Flashes or
Golden
something.
Eagles.
Is it? I think it's something about a flash. Hang on, Kent State.
Oh, Golden Flashes. You're right.
Baseball. Golden Flashes. And they were, so we were at some tables down the left field line, and the players are warming up in front of us, and we just turn to one of them and we go, "We have a legitimate question for you, and this is not us trying to heckle you. What is a golden flash?" And they were like, "Oh, well, what's this and this and this?" And it was just like, it was like that, you know, that kind of that level of like, you're just having this casual conversation with the opposing ball players while they're warming up, and it's always good venue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like baseball is like gets super heated like before games and stuff.
No, football, yeah, maybe baseball.
That makes a little bit more
basketball,
sense.
Basketball, absolutely.
But see, you end up like paused a lot, and so like a lot of teammates will be standing next to opponents and stuff on the bases, and you don't want it to be awkward.
Be like, I was talking trash about your sister. Now we got
now
some time.
Here we are.
Now we got some time to kill while this new pitcher warms up. So
yeah. So I'll just stand here awkwardly for 4 minutes.
From everything I've heard about baseball, it's like a lot of the players have a, you know, good mutual respect for each other. A lot of them, like, you get to the pro level when there's, you know, like MLB, and
when
a lot
business?
Of the players know each other and friendly conversations with each other, and you know, there's a level of respect that there just you don't see in other sports, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said, though, is really has nothing to do with Oregon baseball whatsoever, but it's just baseball topic. I've always said that I would make the worst manager in baseball because I have no respect for the unwritten rules of the game.
Dude, the unwritten rules are so dumb.
I would be like, well, we're up 12-0 and they're not covering you and you want to steal second, be my guest, pad those stats a little bit.
You can only coach one team.
Yeah,
see, here's my thing. The unwritten rules in baseball are such BS. It just allows you to get away with dumb behaviors, and they just don't write them down so that they can make up whatever excuse there is.
Yeah.
Like all the unwritten rules about like X, Y, or Z about that results in you being able to bean somebody. It's like, no, they just look for an excuse to hit somebody. Like, oh, the bat flip was wrong, so I'm going to hit the guy next. It's like, come on.
Then we're going to have a bases clearing.
Yeah, and then the unwritten rule is you have to clear the bases and punch people.
Yep.
You
got to defend each other. And
yeah, it's like, come on. So archaic.
So, yeah, it's shuffling through. There's 12 Ducks playing summer ball.
Mm-hmm.
Tolman was named All-Regional. Former Ducks playing pro baseball at the AAA level. Good stuff all around.
You know, baseball.
They had seven. What? I'm just guessing a ballpark number. They had a handful of people drafted into the MLB draft.
Yeah.
It was always good to see.
That's the tough thing as like a semi casual fan of Oregon baseball. Is it's like we sign all these guys, and then like on Addicted to Quack, there's like a thread of who's getting drafted and if they're ever going to show up. It's like, well, this is kind of awkward. Like,
the MLB draft is a very confusing thing. I mean, not only does it go on for eternity, there's like 40 rounds or something,
and then there's joke picks like Michael Vick gets drafted and like Russell Wilson gets drafted.
Yeah.
People who have never played this sport before get drafted,
and it's just like they're like, oh well, you know, he hasn't, He can still decide whether he wants to go to college or turn pro, but he's been drafted by the Dodgers. It's like, why don't other sports get this luxury, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I can't wrap my head around all the rules, but someone signed somewhere, and it's all a very confusing thing to me.
Yeah. Every year I tell myself I'm going to spend more time watching Oregon baseball, and then somehow it just slips away from me.
I got super stoked for the beginning of the year, mostly because it was like mid-February and it was the first taste of baseball since, you know, the fall.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, posted up with my laptop watching the local Hawaii stream of that series. And then I think I didn't watch a game for the rest of the year after that Hawaii series.
Classic.
I kept an eye on them, but I never, like, all those games that were on the Pac-12 networks, I, like, never sat down and watched them. So, new goal for 2016.
Huh. All right. To the sport that everybody's been waiting for. Track and field.
Track and field. My guys.
Both the men and women won the national titles.
Which, yeah. Women, first title in 30 years, men, back-to-back titles. Here's the thing that I'll kick off with. I want to find this guy's name so I get this whole thing right. Texas A&M coach, Pat Henry. I'm sure you've all heard of this by now. Hayward Field atmosphere, a quote, unfair advantage for the Ducks.
Sounds about right. That's and probably a legit complaint, though.
He says, well, I'll go on to tell you why it's total BS.
Okay.
And this, so from the Oregonian here, quote, this is just not a fair environment. You don't have the basketball championships in Rupp Arena with Kentucky in the mix because it's an unfair advantage. And I will say this as both a guy who's run track before and mostly has spent significant time at Hayward Field, both as a fan and as a media member on both sides of it. They are, yeah, there is the Hayward magic that, you know, you put on that yellow Oregon singlet or whatever color they decide to wear for the day. And you know, you're running in front of the home crowd and they're cheering a little bit harder for the Ducks. Yeah, that's, of course, there's the Hayward magic. But you can talk to other track and field athletes, and that Hayward magic applies to everyone.
Right.
Because it's a fan base that just cares about the sport. And they're cheering when there's a race that there's no Ducks in that race, they're still cheering for all the athletes, and they've got that synchronized clap when they come around every lap, and it's a special atmosphere, and it's an atmosphere that you can't mimic anywhere else in the country. And there's no such thing as, I don't think there's a such thing as a home track advantage, so to speak. I think it's good for the athletes to be in a venue and be in a community for the championships where the people just care so much about the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really good for the sport for it to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where, you know, he's bitter about maybe they're cheering a little bit harder for the Ducks. It's like you can't compare a basketball game and a track meet. That's just too completely different atmospheres. In a basketball game, there's a clear difference between who you're cheering for. And it's like if you're in a race, let's say you're a Texas A&M runner and you're racing in the 5,000 meters and there's Edward Cheserek and the Oregon guys up front and you've got the thunderous cheers. I can speak for that as a runner who's been in those situations. You benefit from those cheers just as much as they do, because mm-hmm. it's just like it's the adrenaline of like the roar of the crowd. And I think the track championships are in Eugene permanently until like at least 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's talks of like just making it a permanent thing, kind of how you have like softball in Oklahoma City and baseball in Omaha, and it's just that's where you go every year.
Yeah. I thought of another analogy. I mean, it's unfair in the same way that UCLA should never be allowed to play in a Rose Bowl.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's just an unfair advantage. We have to move the national championship or the Rose Bowl away from the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
When UCLA plays in it. It's a rule. It's science. You can't argue with it.
You can't argue with science. But no. Interesting story from the championship. So Edward Cheserek won the 10,000 meters. Won the title there. I think he swept the 5K and the 10K. So it's, you know, Cheserek and Eric Jenkins were kind of the powerhouse guys for Oregon this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, and Cheserek, or not Cheserek, Jenkins was talking to the media after the 10K race that that Cheserek won. And the plan was for them to cross the finish line together, 1-2, like cross the line at the exact same moment. If, you know, you need to determine a winner, go to the photo finish, but they're not, you know, it's, that was the plan to go across the line 1-2. And then Cheserek kind of surged away at the end and
Dick.
Was the clear winner. And he said, and Jenkins was saying, you know, well, he won, but that's not how it was supposed to happen. He just, and you could tell he was bitter about it.
Oh, really?
And he was a little salty there. You know, I would be too. It's like, okay, we were supposed to do this together as teammates, go across 1-2, and you just pulled away at the end. You
changed his mind. Changed his mind last second.
Psych, I'm going to be a national champion and you're not.
Oh, yeah. Wait, oh, wow.
You know, so.
Oh, wow.
And then there's this great picture and of the end of the 5,000 final, you know, and Cheserek's crossing the line winning. And Jenkins is about a step or two behind, and he just has a big smile on his face looking at Cheserek. And, you know, who knows if that's, you did it again, you know, or I'm sure by that point in the race it was every man for himself. And but yeah, Edward Cheserek is a special runner. He's going to do some big things at the pro level. He said he's only a sophomore, but there is already talks of him going pro, but he said he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So more victories for Oregon coming through. And the big thing from the women's side, let me go back to my reliable home of goducks.com here. Because I don't want to... I'm blanking.
The ugliest site I've ever looked at.
God, it's a disaster.
It is not good. And they paid so much money for that.
Yeah.
And it looks awful. None of the sliding banners work. Everything's just mashed together. Man, they paid for that. That's terrible.
Let's see. Since I can't find it on the site. Here we go. This is what I was looking for. Women's 10,000 meter race. This proved to be huge for the Ducks. Because the whole thing with track and field is form charts, and it's essentially here's where you're predicted to finish. And because if you're not familiar with it, track and field, it's actually it's a relatively simple sport to score and follow along with. You've essentially got, you know, it's most points wins, and if you get first place, it's 10 points, second place is 8 points, third place is 6 points, and then, so I think it goes 10, 8, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I think is how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So 10,000 meters, and Ken Go is kind of the go-to track and field guy in Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
He's been doing it since. I love this in his article. The Coupe de Grace was in the 10,000. So Molly, Grabill, and Waverly Near came out of nowhere for a 4-5 finish that gave the Ducks 9 unexpected team points, vaulting them back into contention. And I think I'm trying to pull up what the final scores were, but it was like those 9 points basically kind of pushed Oregon over the edge and played a huge part in getting them the title. So even in track and field, even if you're getting fourth, fifth place, it can go a long way. Man. So that was huge.
9? If I see guys finish fourth and fifth, I'm like, oh, well, whatever.
Yep.
It's all the little things. It's like the linemen sealing the edge. All right. Well, this has been exhaustive.
We've covered just about everything that we can talk about with some intelligence.
Yeah, as we are now just shy of 100 minutes. So maybe we'll have to split this up. I hope not. But yeah, any closing comments?
It's been a good year of Oregon athletics. Some national championships here and there, some almost national championships, and it'll be another fun season of Oregon sports coming up in 2015, 2016. 75 days, people. 75 days, and we're...
From the day we're recording.
75 days from the day we're recording, which means by the time you're listening to this, it'll be less than that.
73, probably.
Inching closer every day.
All right, well, that'll do it for us here at Addicted to Quack. We're all out, so we're going to have to go stock back up, sling some more. It's the downtime right now, but we should be doing some of these more regularly as we get closer and closer.
If you like lengthy summer tangents where we're talking about nothing in particular, oh, this summer is going to be for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you get tired of solid verbal doing it. Doing it terribly, but shots fired. So if for some reason someone wants us to cover something, hit us up in the comments and we'll do it, I guess. If people are up for us talking about random stuff. All right. So that'll do it for us here at Addicted to Quack. I'm Rusty. That was Sean. See you guys again soon.